Mr. Higton, reel 8. Now, we've got to the point where you and your section have just taken up positions on the forward slope on Green Hill, facing the Germans across the valley, the Green Hill section. That night, anything happened that night?
No, it was not till dawn, when dawn broke.
So did you have a standing patrol out in front of your position?
No.
So you were the front line?
We were the front line.
And you'd been told to expect an attack or not?
We'd been told that Germany was on the move. That was a message that Germany was on the move.
So what happened?
Well, at dawn, we could see them coming down the incline from their position, coming down to the valley. We could see them, that little dots moving. And the Bren gunner says, "Can I have a go?" I said, "You're too far away, mate. Save the ammunition. We want it."
Did you call up artillery support?
We did in the end, yes, but that's a little bit in front of it. So,
do you know the date of this attack?
Yes, March 3rd. March 3rd.
Okay, so, sorry, what happened then?
And the Germans were coming down, and there was an extended order coming down, end line, coming down. And I kept the men going quiet until the rains dropped. Now we're still 400 yards, but I could see if they got any further, they'd be in the dip and we couldn't see them. I said, "Go on then, have a go, fire at will," and they let go. They let go, and they were still blazing away. When from the back of us, I always remember that name. His name was Cocky, and he was a farmer. And he came belting around the corner, throwing his hands up in there and yelling on top of his voice, "What's the matter?" He says, "They're here, the Germans, they're here, they're here." And they'd come around the backside, come around me, around the flank. We were still firing at them, looking in the front. And they came around from my left-hand side, round the corner, round the flank. And the first one round, he was the biggest bloke I'd ever seen. He must have been 6'6". And I said to the lads, leave it. And he says, "Go on."
Gestured to you with your finger.
So he went and he came.
I think I understand why he did. Couldn't you have fought on, or was it absolutely hopeless?
No, it was hopeless. I was left since I was in the opposition. But he came round, the first thing he did was put his foot underneath the ground and kick it like that. And then he gave me a cigarette. And he got the lads and he spoke English and he said, "We're going down to the bottom now." Now, this is where the artillery comes in. The artillery LP was with us, and he got captured. But he got the message about before the jury got him. We went down to the bottom, and we had to sit in the river, on the banks, all the afternoon, while the 25-pounders were melting Mary Ann out of the jury. And the German's officer said, "This is the safest place, right down in the dip, because any shells are allowed to drop short or they got over the top of you. Stay with me, you'll be alright." But we know that our Bren gun had done well because there was some wounded Jerry down there and one of them wanted to shoot us all because his mates had been killed. And the Jerry officer said, no, finish. And I know if one of them came to me and wanted to watch, and the Jerry officer said, "You didn't talk to me, Elwin, don't leave it." And he says to me, "You're quite safe." I can understand it, I mean, when some of the pals have been ploughed up, but how they got around the back, we don't know, but apparently the old battalion of the Germans had come behind us and they'd come up on the back end. When the position we were in first is the position we should have been in when they came, but we went and moved us.
Who was responsible for that, would you say?
That was battalion headquarters. Last time I saw Gordon Barker, he said, "Harry," he says, at last, after all these years, they've admitted that he was in the wrong place.
Now, where was Barker when he was captured? What in relation to you?
He came with me. He got captured the same time I did.
He was with you behind the wall?
He was behind the wall, yes. He was with the battalion headquarters. The platoon headquarters, the third bloke's with him. But he came to me And the first thing he said was, you know, Harry, he says, we're going to have a miserable, horrible time of it. I said, how do you mean? He said, not physically, he said, but we're going to be bunged up and you'll be both to tears. And he was right in some ways. Yeah. But he was all right, and as I say, he is a parson. I didn't know at the time, but he's a Catholic. And after we got captured, both in North Africa and in Italy, he was allowed to come and talk to the lads, even though he's in officer's camp. Me and a parson, they allowed him to come over. And that's how we got messages from one to another. Give them in. And he'd say, don't write them down, I can remember. Who do you want me to see and why? And that he'd take messages from.
Now, you were in this valley, river, you know, sheltering. Were there any casualties from the 25 pound of fire?
No, we was all right. We were missed that. But it's a horrible feeling. I've heard stories told about the worst thing that could happen is me under 25 pound of barrage. And I believe it. It was scary, frightful.
Why was it? Was it worse than, say, the German 88 or Malta?
Yeah.
Why?
The main reason is that the quickness. The shells, the bigger ones, you know, you get one and then you've got to wait while they reload. So you get a battery of 25 pounds, you know, bump, 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 and you can hear them coming, shoo, bump, shoo, bump. Yes, it is scary. And they're more precise. You know.
So, how long were you down in that valley then?
We stayed there till it got dark, and then. The German, the officer came and he said, get your lads, there's a truck coming in under cover of darkness. And they took us to Ferryville.
To where?
Ferryville. Ferryville is a port, North African port.
Were there any thoughts of escape, or, you know, while you were in the truck or anything, or were you well guarded?
No, we were too well guarded.
How many in the truck?
The one that we were on was the Ferryville, was one of the truck. And there was a driver and a soldier and a machine gun with him. So there was no. Besides, we'd had such a tatar in that 3 months, what with patrols and whatnot, I don't think any of us thought of escaping in that moment. Later on, probably, yeah, but not in that moment. Mm. And we dipped us into Ferryville.
What happened there?
And it was a German, they'd taken over a big mill and they put us in there. They fed us well, they really looked after us.
What sort of food did they give you?
We really enjoyed it. The German meat, and it wasn't bully beef, it was like a stewed steak in tins. And bread, because bread was black, the black bread, or brownish colour, called it black bread, brownish colour. They give you a loaf, and so they loaded for six of you, cut it up for six, and you have a tin of a stew steak apiece. And the only thing with the tea was the mint tea. The German barley farmer, when he saw the ordered tea, they got mint tea. They bring a big bucket full of it. But they were very good. Very good.
What about the latrines and washing facilities
yes,
at the mill?
The latrines and washing in the big building, but more like a barracks. And probably a week didn't. We got to know them, and they didn't worry. You've come rolling more than the tent.
Had they interrogated you at all at any point?
No, that was what we were afraid of, but they didn't. Nobody in my section was taken away or interrogated. I think they knew all they wanted to know. They knew we belonged to the foresters, although we'd taken the badges off. They knew we came from the Nottingham Valley district. They told us all right, so they knew, and they knew how long we'd been there. They told us what date we landed. They told us what date we left England, so we got all the information we wanted. But after the German officer came, and he was very apologetic. I forgot to tell you, I got the regimental sergeant major with me as well. And he was very apologetic, and he wanted some fatigue to him.
Now, hang on, where did you pick Tar up? He wasn't with you when you were captured
No, he was captain.
At the same, yeah.
Yeah, and he came into the same camp. And he looked at my three stripes and he said, no, no, no. And he looked at Sergeant Major because he got his little crown down on his sleeve. And he pulled him out and he said, come on. And he took him on fatigue. And he demonstrated. He said, no, no, I'm ready. No, 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 no stripes, no stripes. You've got, away you go. And he took him on fatigue. And then after a week, he says, I'm sorry, gentlemen. He says, but the Italians say that Tunisia is their territory. He says, so reluctantly, I've got to hand you over to the Italians. He says, it's been a very pleasant meeting, you gentlemen. But now, farewell, and we're taking it in turn.
Now, how many were there at Ferryville in this meal, do you reckon?
I reckon there'd be 100 of us at least.
All Sherwoods?
All Sherwoods, and there's a couple of RASC support, but most of the foresters. And now this is the funniest little bit. They took us to this Italian camp just outside Ferryville in the country, all barbed wire and whatnot, and took us to the gate, and we got the BC Clare Regiment. Well, the BC Clare Regiment, those with the big plumes in the hats, and took us in there. And the letter slips up. And the Sergeant Major, Regimental Sergeant Major Tara, sat watching these guards and officers, shall we say. He couldn't stand it any longer. And he went up to the guard on the gate and he took his rifle off him. He marched up down with it, he sloped arms, he presented arms, and then he turned around and he threw it to the Italian and said, now you do like that. He threw it back at him and he came back in. The poor Italian, he was dumbfounded. He didn't know what to say, what to do. Yeah.
And that was Tara Hennessy.
Tara Hennessy. Yeah. Yeah. The character, Tara. Yeah.
What was he like to, I mean, did you talk to him? I mean, you were a sergeant, he was the RSA. Would he talk to you in the camp?
Yeah. Everything had got me on the line, it was discipline, but you could talk to him. And when he was off duty, he was off duty. And that was it. You were man to man.
And in the prison camp, what would you chat about?
Well, he told us about Chelsea and London and what he'd been in India. And he was a good raconteur. Yes, he was good to listen to, with Tony.
So you went to this new Italian camp. Was the food and the as good there?
Yes, it was different. It was more macaroni than that, you know, the Italian food. We only stayed a week.
What about sanitation, washing, latrines?
Yes, we've got
water.
We've got water. We've got zinc wash bowls. No hot water, cold water. Zinc wash bowls. And the biggest scourge there was fleas.
You'd not had fleas before?
We'd not had fleas. That was the first time I met them, fleas.
Was there anything you could do?
Not much. We didn't get flea powder till we got into Germany. Oh dear. Fleas and flies. Anyway, we had a week there. And then they took us into Berserta, and it was a Danish ship with an Italian crew and the German captain, who was a Papua New Guinea nation. Now this is where the fun and game starts, because we're leaving Africa and we're leaving the war behind us, and everybody's a little bit light-hearted by this time. The food isn't very good at all, but the German captain, one day he said, got a special meal for you. And for all the sailors and the Germans, given him permission to give us a meal of German food. And it was lovely to get this food. Then the fun starts. I tell you, the Italian armies there And I always remember this chap is standing in the room with his rifle on. He's been trimming out. And our lad said, "Watch him." And I don't know if you've seen this before. I start playing imaginary darts. One, double top. One. And then somebody in gold pulled him out of the ball and give him back to him. No, you want double top? Oh, that's it. Press it down. And the Italian's going, yeah. Couldn't understand it. So the two of them are going to stand at the side of him, stand up straight at the side of him, get looking at him. He'd pick his rifle up and move off and he couldn't stand it anymore. And this went on for day two. And finally, the captain had us all on deck. All the old English contingent was all on deck. And they looked very stern and they gave us a lecture. Try to look after you, I want to get you to Italy safe. Now, gentlemen, I would respectfully remind you who are the prisoners on this ship and who are the guards. That was the old gentleman, and then his face broke into a smile and walked away. He knew it was going off. Yeah. And we went to Naples, Napoli.
Were you aware of the risk of RAF?
Yes, we had one near one with a Sunderland flying boat. We thought he'd got us, but
did he bomb you?
No, he dropped a torpedo, but he missed us, fortunately. We were still in the army, anyway. And that was only a little sore. And then we went on the cover of darkness across the straits up into Italy, to Naples.
What was your reception when you got ashore at Naples?
The thing that struck us first was the German letters off the ship. On the wall at the top was the Italians, and they were speaking in German. And that was the first England we got to know that there was something afoot, you know, between the two of them. No, they were spitting at the German. Well, that's not very nice for supposedly friends. But
how were they treating you?
All right, okay.
So it was definitely the Germans who were spitting at, you know. So
oh, yes, it wasn't. It was the German guard who was spitting at.
So where did they take you first?
They took us to Capua. I think Capua, which is 9 or 10 miles from Naples.
How did they do that? By truck or?
Took us by truck, yeah. Left us inside to the Italians. And the Italians never bothered coming inside, only counting to it.
What type of building was it, Capilla?
It was proper barrack rooms. Proper barrack rooms.
Like a proper prisoner of war camp?
Proper prisoner of war camp, yeah. There'd be about 50, 60 men in each long foot. And two tier bunks.
Do you know the number, you know, PG-53 or whatever?
PG-66.
PG-66.
Yeah. PG-53 was the only other one we went to.
And about how many of there were you in Capilla, PG-66?
There was a lot there than we got there, because there was a lot who had been caught in the early African War, and then they was already installed there. We had a lot of coloured in as well.
Where from?
A lot of African coloured had been caught in Africa during the first Rommel's Bush.
Now, what was there were barracks. What defences did the Italians have around you? Or not defences, but wire fencing.
Yeah, 8 miles of wire and guard patrolling.
And did they have towers, watchtowers and things?
Watchtowers, one on each corner.
So a conventional prisoner of war camp.
Yeah, you know, the apron wire coming down so you could get near the main fence.
And what were the barracks like? Could you describe them?
Yes, they were basic, but they were clean, and we were issued with brushes and buckets to keep them so. The ablutions were concrete, but were clean. Of course, remember, this is the Italian summer, so it didn't matter if it was cold water. You could have a cold shower, cold wash, and there was a barber there. I had all my hair shaved.
Why was that?
cleanliness, because again, this is where we're faced. We'd already met the fleas, but this is where we first met the lice and the four layers.
Did a lot of men, did you shave off just your head, or was it all your hair?
All. The arms and everything. And then painted.
Now, how many men to the hut, you said? About 60?
About 60.
What were your bunks? How were they laid out indoors, inside?
Down each side, and the middle of the room were clear. Down each side. There'd be 15 twos down this side, 15 twos down that side.
There were two bed bunks?
Two bed bunks, yeah.
And they'd just be ordinary mixed everybody, or was it all British?
No, you'd have a British cut, and then the African cut, and there was one or two Frenchmen, not many of them. See if the British.
Was there any heating? It wouldn't matter much.
No heating.
And who was in charge of the hut?
You see the NCO had been charged.
And who would that be in your hut?
Sergeant Doughty was a senior lad in our hut.
So one of your own?
One of our own, yeah. Yeah.
And what was his job to do in charge of the hut?
He was, each morning, he and I would report to the cookhouse with a number of men in the hut. You had to give names of it. You'd draw rations for the day. And we went up to 2 hours then.
How did they give you a Dixie then, a big Dixie?
No. How they worked it was, in the morning, we should have one of the Italian cobs, be about as big as that, and probably a couple of ounces of cheese, bare man, which you take and dish out. Now, tea, Red Cross parcels coming in, and you get a bucket of tea from the cookhouse. The lads have got their own mugs. And then, probably 5 o'clock time.
What about in the afternoon? Sorry, lunch?
No, you'd get your breakfast, and then your next one would be up past 4 or 5.
So no lunch or dinner, what have you got?
They'd bring the dishes around with the Italian stew in. And the lads used to say, oh, camel again. And a little bit of meat floating. The lads used to say, that's camel. Mostly it'd be macaroni or beans.
So macaroni or beans, sort of stewy.
And that bit of meat. The idea was, it came, either Sergeant Doughty to myself would be there with it, and the lads would kill it, and they come through with the mixes, they'd fill the mug, and then they'd rotate, they'd come back again. If there's any left, it would be second helping for them. Now, the next day, they'd start where you left off, so everybody left off. Very democratic.
And what was the food like overall? Was there
a... It was enough. It was enough.
You weren't starving?
I weren't starving, no. The highlight of the day, I think, was that you were counted probably 4 o'clock time. So we had a drill sergeant, typical army, waking up out of the weather. And we'd be under the drill sergeant, and the Italian camp commandant, Major, would come in, two sergeants, up down the wire camp. You weren't allowed to sing God Save the King, singing Western Anthem. So instead, the lads ran them open glory. As soon as they finished counting, the senior NCO would salute the Italian officer and start to run them open glory. I'm not joking. My hair used to stand on end, what little bit I've got left. To hear all together, there was 300 or 400 men singing at the top of the glory, in the open glory. You couldn't see those Italian for dust, they'd be gone. Must have been frightening for them.
So, how would you spend your day? Where'd you get the books from?
Very democratic, because most soldiers have got one in the kit somewhere. And they did have a recreation hut, which was a library. Providing you could give them a book, they give you paper, and you could draw one out. One for one. If you didn't have one, we had the tourist system on it, where we got them from, probably people who'd been in. If you gave the librarian 2 cigarettes, then they'd issue you with a chip and you could have a book. Because cigarettes were currency in Italy and in Germany. Yeah.
So, what sort of books would be in the library?
Somewhere I was looking this morning at the books I'd borrowed from the library. There'd be H.G. Wells and A.G. Street and Warwick Deakin, Cronin.
Popular fiction.
Popular fiction, all paperbacks. Yeah, all paperbacks.
The Red Cross didn't send any books then, or did they?
I didn't see any there. No. The Red Cross brought parcels, full parcels, and for a start, we did very well. We used to get one a week between 2 hours.
And what would be in the parcels?
You'd have a tin of spam, a tin of jam, 4 ounces of tea, 20 cigarettes, a packet of salt, probably a packet of prunes or raisins, biscuits. Oh, enough to keep you going over the week. Yeah. Some had coffee instead of tea. Or if there were any Canadian or Yanks knocking about, they'd want that treated. And they'd trade it, you know, give you 20 cigarettes for it.
So how were they issued, the parcels?
The Italians would bring them in underneath the drill shed on the tables, and you'd line your hooks one by one. So I didn't doubt it myself, representing our hook. We'd be there, and the lads came up, take me in tours and give them a parcel. And you'd have the corporal making sure that they didn't come back again at the end of the queue. And he was Lucky Charlie at the end, make sure nobody came around to come back again. Yes.
Now, what else might you do during the day? We were talking about that.
We did have lectures. You know, you get all sorts of people with you, and if it was nice, you'd sit outside. And we had a taxi driver who'd come and talk to us about his life as a taxi driver, and a parson, a builder, a coppersmith, a watchmaker, all these sort of people. And they'd keep going from that, and they'd, you know, we'd gather around and listen. And it was very good. Of course, we had a bit of a choir. And we had one chap.
Did you engage in that?
Oh, just for the sake of singing. And we had one chap in Noel. I know his first name is Noel, his second name is Kate. But he could sing exactly like Gracie Field, or falsetto was. And that night time, he used to go and stand behind the wire and sing Gracie's songs, Oh Sole Mio, and all the Italians had gathered outside, and they'd throw him drag on. And if you look out, they'd be there waiting for it, waiting for Noel to come in, and they never got fed up. Noel would sing all Gracie's songs for them, and then he'd pass the food around his pals. But, I don't really remember Noel. Yeah. He was a sergeant, or he is, I think he was.
Anything else you'd do during the day?
Wash, bath, bee bug, get his clothes out in the sun, turn them inside out, and go around all the seams, because that's where the lice would be in the seams, and crack them off, get them out, brush them out. If you've got a shoe brush, you'd be lucky to brush the inside. But all your clothes, your shirts, and everything can be turned inside out, and really. If it was your shirts and vests, they were so warm that you can wash them out and hang them out by windows and then dry off. You couldn't do that with your thick trousers, but you could do that with your thinner stuff. And all your beds, you take them out. Because we had palliasses filled with peat moss. Well, you take them out and give them a good shaking during the day. Get some sunshine on them to sweeten them up. But every night the routine was to start at one end of the barrack room, half a dozen blocks of towels, and go up the barrack room, wafting them to get the flies out, because they're there by the million, flies. Terrible. How the Italians lived, I don't know, but
did that work?
Nightly routine is get them all out. But you get in bed, and then you start itching with the fleas, you know. So you had to get out, turn your blanket top to bottom, and then you could settle for a bit till the crawl back up again. And 3 or 4 times a night, it was fleas. And it put me off for life. I've never been to Italy since.